Now it's my pleasure to welcome Charlotte to Major League Soccer as our 30th team. And now your new owner, David Tepper.
Charlotte.
You ready to party?
Please join me in welcoming Charlotte Football Club's first head coach, Miguel Angel Ramirez.
Buenos dias.
In the 2022 MLS Super Draft, presented by Adidas, Charlotte FC selects from the University of Maryland and Generation Adidas, Ben Bender.
Welcome, benvenuti, bienvenido. Match day is here again as Charlotte FC takes on Nashville SC in the bank. Today our guest comes to us from Music City. He is lead commentator for Nashville SC, Tony Husband. Tony has been the voice of Nashville SC since their debut season in 2020. He is a UK and US broadcaster who has worked on some of the most iconic BBC sports programs, such as Match of the Day and Final Score, and the BBC South Today Show. He's also covered major events including the Olympics, the FA Cup Final, Champions League, Football, World Athletic Series, and Wimbledon. In 2020, Tony was named Royal Television Society Southern Sports Journalist of the Year. Born in Plymouth, Tony played cricket for the Devon Colts while at Plymouth College and graduated from Bournemouth University in 1998. He started his sports broadcasting career at Southampton commentator for BBC Radio Solent and covered the 2003 FA Cup Final. Let's learn more about Tony Husband and Nashville SC.
All right. Well, welcome, Tony, to the podcast.
Nick, it's great to be on with you. Thank you for having me.
Sure. Appreciate you spending time. So want to start out. So this Saturday is the first meeting between Nashville SC and Charlotte FC, two of the most recent MLS expansions teams, especially in the South here. NSC sits sixth place in the Western Conference, only really 3 points behind being sole possession of third. Y'all are 2-2-1 in your last five games. What's going well this season?
Well, once again, no season in MLS for this Nashville group has been kind of what I would term as normal, Nick, for them. If you think back to the COVID-affected debut year, inaugural season of 2020, which in the end was an incredible success, incredible story, really, for this team that went actually very deep in the playoffs and wasn't a million miles away from doing something quite extraordinary in its debut year. Then 2021, there was an unbalanced schedule with a lot of home games front-loaded in the season at Nissan Stadium. And then they finished the season pretty much exclusively on the road. And this year, we flipped it all the way around. Right. And it's been starting out with 8 games on the road, a change of conference. So a lot of arduous, long traveling around the United States out west with a few more of those trips still to come. But again, it's been another year of progress. And of course, the big moment really for the club has been moving into the new stadium at Jodis Park, opening that and opening really what, you know, I think most observers would say, you know, is a fabulous new arena in American soccer with one of the most vibrant atmospheres around. And, you know, we look forward to the day that Charlotte will make a first visit over to Jodis Park as well. But 3 seasons each with their own story, but ultimately one that has been a very successful one for everyone connected with the club.
So what do you say has been their success this season? Has it anything in particular stood out?
Well, I think when you look on the field at, you know, what's gone well, I think the evolution and the progress of Hani Mukhtar has continued. You know, his star started to shine last year. I think many people felt that he was a little unfortunate not to be named the league's MVP, considering he finished the season as the league's best player, I think, for many. And that's taking nothing away from Carlos Hill's, you know, efforts at New England. But this season has been about more magic from Hani Mukhtar, more moments that people are remembering, a lot of which come from him, and about the development of the team and moving into, you know, this new stadium, this new building that has been such a big moment on the horizon for the club and has now opened. And broadly, everything has gone pretty well. You know, they'd swap a couple of the draws for a couple more home wins, I'm sure. But considering the start to the season that they were faced with, 8 games on the road, starting up weekend one, you know, in Seattle with one of the toughest away trips you would face in a season, right, to be where they are with 5 away wins already on the slate, it's a very, very good spot in a league, really, that I find, Nick, you know, it's all about hitting your momentum and being in the right spot come the end of the season so that, you know, you're firing on all cylinders as you hit postseason.
Right. And Charlotte's just coming off their first road victory, so it's going to be interesting. So if that's what's going well, what are their challenges this season? What has been difficult for them?
Well, I think the challenge often is, you know, just being in that mindset to play, you know, for 8 games, as I mentioned, you know, they played on the road all the time. The challenge mentally and physically on a team when you know nothing else almost other than going to the airport on a Friday, getting on that plane, flying sometimes 4 or 5 hours to a destination, getting off that plane and then and just doing it week after week after week. And, you know, we joke sometimes the players, they probably got off the plane, they couldn't even remember where they were. They just got so used to this kind of travel schedule. So, you know, the challenge has been playing, you know, on those long trips and being able to have a mentality that digs out results. And broadly, they've done that away. I mean, that's gone really, really well for them. As I mentioned, you know, they've opened Jodi's Park and they've got a couple of wins under their belts, which was absolutely crucial to do because you didn't want to open a new stadium and be waiting for that first win or that first goal. You know, now they have lost a game, finally, after 25 games undefeated in the city of Nashville in all competitions. You know, finally somebody beat them. Well, it's going to happen. You know, this is sport. You're going to lose at some point.
Right.
But the key has been how they respond to that. Portland obviously came back and pegged them back to a 2-2 tie last weekend in difficult circumstances. But ultimately, I think Gary Smith took probably more from the performance and was encouraged by it than, you know, what really ultimately was a, you know, an individual human error, which led to Portland's comeback.
Right. So when I think of Nashville SC, I kind of think of stability. That's what comes to mind because you have Gary Smith, you have Hani Mukhtar, you have Walker Zimmerman, Anibal Godoy. All of those players and coach, of course, they've all been there since the beginning, right? So can you kind of share their impact on the club over the last 3 years?
Absolutely. And I think that's a really good point you come in on there, because if I take you back to the kickoff in Seattle at the end of February, first game of season 3 in MLS, 9 players who suited up on the starting 11 for Nashville on that opening day of season 3 started the very first MLS game here in February 2020 against Atlanta. And that was extraordinary. I think it tells you about how well the club recruited these kind of foundational pieces. They signed players, obviously, for their abilities on the field, but also about the personalities and the characters they were off the field. Because you've got to put together, you know, it's difficult as an expansion club. You know, you have to put together this roster of people that have never played together before, and you have to hit the ground running. And that's what went so well because, you know, they got the pieces of the puzzle right. And it's really meant that ever since, with anybody coming in and changes along the way and evolution of the side, it's been about just improving those little parts. It hasn't been about having to kind of, right, start with a blank slate and here we go again. It's been about, right, where do we need to improve? So you look at this season, where was a little area where they could bolster the squad? Well, they brought in Sean Davis, who's made a tremendous impact from New York Red Bulls. So CJ Sapong coming in last year, the combination he set up with Hani Mukhtar has been, you know, outstanding, one of the best combinations in the league now. So foundational moments right back at the beginning have held Nashville in very good stead into what is now, you know, season 3 for them.
Well, you have more than 2/3 of your roster are U.S. players. Whereas you look at Charlotte FC, they have about 6 of their 30-man roster. So that probably also has some things to do with, you know, people mending and kind of coming together. Do you think that has any – was that a focus of the club to get U.S. players or?
Well, I mean, I think definitely it's – The club has managed to recruit a good core of, you know, home-based players, if you like. And, you know, that they have formed a very, very strong group. You know, when you look at players like Dax McCarthy, Walker Zimmerman, I don't think it was specifically because they were American. I think it was that they were players who knew the league. I think that's probably the key point here. you know, you look at like, a lot of players come in from outside MLS, you know, from club to club. And, you know, a lot of players, for whatever reason, it doesn't work out. So I think, you know, there's a good emphasis on players who know MLS. They know the rigors and the unique qualities that this league has. The fact that, you know, travel in this league is very different to in most countries. You know, the weather that you play in can be very different to a lot of countries. So I think having players who understand the league, and having a general manager like Mike Jacobs, who, you know, just lives the league and knows everything about this league and every player that's out there and every player we haven't heard about yet, you know, that has proved to be very beneficial for them. But then again, you know, kudos to Charlotte. You know, I've been looking through the roster this week as we prep for the game. You know, there's a good blend of experience in there. There's no doubt about that. Even if in some cases, you know, they haven't played at MLS, but there are some, you know, some foundational parts of that roster who do know the league well.
Right, right. So who should we keep our eye on that's not getting the publicity that that these other players get on Nashville?
Well, yeah, that's right. I mean, right now, so much focus, of course, is on Hany Mukhtar. And I would say still, you know, keep your eye on the way that he is playing and the movement that he produces on the ball, off the ball, his combination work with CJ Sapong. You know, it's great to see. They're almost telepathic at times how well they work. Walker Zimmerman is another one who you might say, yeah, well, you would mention him, but you know, you can't talk about Nashville without talking about someone like Walker Zimmerman, because he's a towering presence in the team. And Gary Smith acknowledges, you know, they're not the same team when Walker Zimmerman is not with them, if, for example, he's away on international duty. But I mentioned him earlier, and I will mention him again, someone like Sean Davis. I think when you consider that Nashville went into this season after a couple of very successful years with a very, very good central midfield core of Dax McCarty, Annabelle Godoy, backed up by Brian Anunga. And you would think, well, you bring in another player to that, this is going to be really, really competitive between that group. And it turned out to be so. But also Sean Davis has played so well that, you know, he came into the side, he played on opening day, and he made it very, very difficult for Gary Smith, you know, not to have him in the team.
Yeah.
Absolutely. You know, and he's a player, of course, who, if you think back to his Red Bulls days, you know, this is a player who played a lot of minutes every season, virtually every minute. And you thought maybe he was coming into a Nashville group where he would have to accept a bit more rotation because of the quality that's already there. But he's done very well to kind of bed down a place and say, you know, you're going to have to do well to get me out of this side. So look out for Sean Davis in midfield, breaking things up, intercepting and playing the ball forward for the likes of Mukhtar to start running at that back line.
So what will we look at after the game's over, or actually even before? If I'm watching, how do I know the boys in gold are playing well against Charlotte in particular? Like, what do you feel like they can really address?
I think the first 20 minutes is going to be very interesting to see. Nashville are coming to Charlotte off the back of two very good league wins, and league wins at Colorado and in DC United, in which it was very clear from early in the game that they were on song, and this was a game that they were in a very, very strong position in. They looked right. They came out of the traps fast. I mean, they won the game in Colorado inside the game's first 20 minutes. It was over. In DC, you knew from the outset that Nashville were in the ascendancy in that game. They scored early that day, and you never really felt like DC were going to haul them back. So the early stages of this game, I think, are going to be very interesting to see whether Nashville can imprint their game plan on Charlotte, or whether Charlotte will come out of the traps fast and put Nashville onto their heels, which, you know, is obviously what the home team would want to do. I think also that, you know, there will be nothing to scare Nashville in one sense in terms of the surroundings. Playing at Bank of America Stadium, I think, will remind them somewhat of playing at Nissan Stadium, where, you know, which was home for two seasons, this Nashville group. Obviously, right. The turf is a difference, but, you know, they've had experience of playing on that from time to time as well, particularly in their fixtures down in Atlanta over the last couple of years. But those opening exchanges, they always tell you a lot about a game, but I think I'll be particularly watching those.
Is there anything that you feel like Nashville does not do well that Charlotte may exploit?
Well, Nashville's built a first 3 years narrative really on being a very, very lively in attack, but also strong defensively, and being, you know, a very, very difficult side to break down. And I wouldn't expect to see anything different at Bank of America Stadium. Now, early in the season, They did have a tendency once or twice to get called out on set piece situations, as is often the case. Set pieces are, you know, a dangerous part of the game for any team. But they've largely wiped out those problems in recent times. But, you know, those are always situations in a game where a team can look to, you know, to try and get an initiative. So I'm sure Charlotte will have been looking at that and thinking, you know, where can they find a chink in Nashville's armory? And those kind of dead ball situations in dangerous areas around the penalty area are always going to be promising for any team. And of course, they have one or two players in the camp who know this Nashville group, you know, Daniel Rios, Derek Jones. Daniel Rios in particular, I'd say, you know, very fondly remembered, Nashville's first MLS signing. A player with a great eye for goal, and a player who left Nashville, you know, with the very best wishes of everybody here, and, you know, who they really hope to see him thrive, just not against Nashville.
Right, right. Just skip a game, right? So Nashville's, and you mentioned earlier their earlier success. They're actually one of four clubs in all MLS that has made it to the playoffs the first two seasons. We think of Atlanta, LAFC, Seattle. That's all pretty good company. But if I were to ask you that question, or any fan, if they could name the four, those other three might come to mind, but Nashville might not. Why do you think it's been like this quiet success for them?
It's a good question. I mean, the other clubs, I guess, you know, in some ways, you know, look, LAFC, you know, look at the LA market. You know, some of these clubs came in with a big splash. And within this market of Nashville and Middle Tennessee, you know, Nashville made its own big splash. You know, there was a record-breaking crowd at the very first game back in February 2020. The new stadium is already, you know, a kind of must-visit venue in a right. in a city, which is a destination city for the US and increasingly for, you know, for world visitors.
Right.
But I think they probably went about their business in a way where, you know, this was not necessarily about glitz and glamour and superstars and going out and saying to the world, you know, look at what we're doing. This was about building foundations. You know, the tagline for the club has been about keep building. It was a club that formed knowing it was moving into a new stadium, you know, in a couple of years. And it steadily wanted to build in the market and also just within MLS, and has done very, very well in doing so. And, you know, sometimes it works quite effectively as well for a club. You know, if you feel like you're maybe off the radar a little bit, well, sometimes being off the radar can actually help you just, you know, climb up that ladder a little bit quicker. And, you know, that's great company for Nashville to be in. You know, clubs who've, you know, who've done a lot in their own ways, but Nashville have done it, you know, their way. And I think when you look at a lot of other expansion teams now, you know, they look at Nashville as a team, you know, that, well, they've come in, they've built, and they've done very well, you know, deep runs in the playoff both years.
Right, right. And you talk about their 25 home match unbeaten streak, which was ended, I think, June 19th against Sporting KC, like of all teams, right? You know, anybody. So yeah. Playing at home, like, what's the advantage? Like, what do you think is contributed to that?
Well, they've just been outstanding at home. You know, I mean, Atlanta beat them in the opening game back in 2020. Dallas got a victory towards the end of 2020. And then it was, you know, an unbeaten season last year at home. And I think that's where, you know, your reputation grows. Nashville came into season two in the league with a, you know, reputation of being very difficult to beat. They expanded on that as becoming a team that started to win more and become more dangerous in the league. And that carried over into this season. They're well set up, you know, they're organized, and they're a side that now has a couple of lethal pieces when you think of the likes of Hany Mukhtar offensively up the front. So, you know, that's a good recipe to do well at home. You know, they've had some draws, you know, but they have a home-friendly schedule in terms of the split now between home and away for the rest of the season. And, you know, that will put them in a very confident position as they look towards the playoffs, you know, because everybody wants that home playoff game. And I don't think anybody would want to come to Nashville to be the away team in a playoff game, because it's a raucous, noisy atmosphere. And, you know, Nashville will always fancy their chances against anyone at home.
Nice. All right. So now let's turn to your amazing career. How did you become interested in becoming a commentator?
Well, Nick, it's very kind of you to say amazing. It's certainly been fun and enjoyed it. You know, it's lovely in a career to say you're doing what you dreamed of doing. I got a couple of lucky breaks in my early life where I simply volunteered to do a couple of things, and one thing led to another, and I found myself working for one of the biggest broadcasters in the world, in the BBC, and that really does open a lot of doors to you. You know, if you're keen and you want to progress, it's several companies within a company. So I was fortunate enough to to work on Radio Sport in the UK. I covered a lot of local radio, soccer, and other sports, and then gradually made a kind of progression to television, and obviously was very fortunate to to cover some big events and to work on some big programs. And it was obviously a wonderful thing to have done, to work for the UK show Match of the Day, which is the kind of iconic BBC Sports right. show, which profiles the Premier League every week. And it's not a lot of people have been able to say they've worked on that show, and it's a great honor to say that I have, and worked on that league as well. So it's been a great ride. It can be unpredictable at times. You never quite know what's around the corner. Hence the move to MLS, which came about very quickly and was something I was very excited to do. But I've had a good time along the way.
Well, what got you started in wanting to do this? Like, were you little? I read that you played cricket, and you had a kind of like a almost like a college career in that, in some respects. But like, did you just know you wanted to be in broadcasting, or were there other areas you were interested in?
I kind of always wanted to be in journalism, I would say, was the first thing. I really appreciate you mentioning the cricket as well, because that was probably the other passion, actually, as a sportsman. I played a lot of cricket in my youth, and greatly enjoyed that, alongside playing sports like soccer and rugby as well. But I suppose the inspiration to it all comes from my family, in particular my grandfather, although both my parents are journalists as well. But my grandfather was a sports writer for one of the big national newspapers in the UK. And he worked through an amazing era of sports, quite a while ago now, but still some of the most iconic days of sports in the 20th century, I guess. So he did soccer, which meant he saw England and reported on England winning the 1966 World Cup. He was also a boxing writer, and he covered the entire kind of era of Muhammad Ali. So he saw Ali win the World Heavyweight Championship for the first time, beating Sonny Liston. He was there when Ali fought Joe Frazier at Madison Square Garden. He was there when Marvin Hagler and Thomas Hearns battled it out for eight of the most incredible moments of boxing you'll ever see in the early 80s. And as his career was drawing to a close, his last world heavyweight title fight that he reported on was in Las Vegas. And it was a young guy called Mike Tyson who was making waves in the sport. And he beat Bonecrusher Smith to take the WBC crown, I think, at that time. And of course, I was getting, the press credentials and the programs and right. the books, and he would bring them back. And, I would be staying with my grandparents, and he would be flying back from Las Vegas. And, as a little kid who loves sport and just, love broadcasting and journalism, you can't really have any more kind of hero in life, really, than that. Yeah. And it set in chain for me, a life really where I wanted to try and replicate some of those things. Now, he was a writer. And I guess as a small child, I thought, I'll be like him, exactly like him, be a writer. But the more I got into the kind of ability to do broadcasting, the more I got into that and set my focus on that. So, it's been great along the way. And it's been great to obviously have that kind of dream in front of you and that family link.
Yeah. So you talk about, being really interested and passionate in something, but there's a lot of people that are passionate and really interested in wanting to do something, but then there's a difference in excelling at it also. So how did you know you were good at what you do?
Well, I mean, I guess in the broadcasting world, if you look at it like that, the proof is really so often in life is if you do something, if you're asked to do it again, then it probably tells you you're doing something right. I remember the first live sports outside broadcast I ever did was at a speedway match, and I was sent across country in England, and I was 21 years old. I newly joined the BBC. They sent me to cover this speedway match. I didn't know much about speedway. I didn't know much about commentating on speedway, but circumstances led to me having to commentate on the last heat of the last race of the season, the last match of the season, with the title on the line for a team called the Poole Pirates. Now, due to the bizarre way it was working with the radio at that time, they couldn't just cross to me to take the live race, which I was already thinking, wow, I have to commentate on these four bikes racing around the circuit. They said, we're going to have to come to you early. Now, little did I know that the match was also being televised, and the TV company was just spreading the time out because they were trying to build the drama of this is all coming down to the final race, so we're going to take another break and build up after the break. And there I am. And so anyway, I did about 13 minutes of what we call in the business filling while waiting for the race to start. and I'm there for 13 minutes on my own. I'd never really done any live commentary before, but apart from kind of, you know, as a kid running around the garden or playing tabletop soccer or whatever. And I did this 13 minutes. I just kept talking, kept going, just kept painting the picture, selling the scene, setting it up, doing what I could. And then finally they had the race, and, you know, I kind of called the race from actually standing behind the main stand and watching it off a TV screen rather than actually trying to watch it live off the track, because it was easier to follow it. So anyway, I did that. And I was told actually, you know, a few days later by an editor at the BBC, well, you know, we're going to give you soccer because we heard you do that, and we knew when we heard you do that, you'd be able to do soccer. And so, you know, that set me up again. You know, you need these moments. And Nick, to be fair, you know, we need some luck sometimes. You need to be in the right place, you know, to do it. And I've been fortunate that, you know, when the luck has come along and I've been in the right place, I haven't let anyone down, and they've asked me again. And you know, in broadcasting, as I said, if they ask you again, then you know you're probably doing okay.
Awesome. That's a great story. So you talked about Nashville kind of wooing you, like, so why Nashville? Imagine you get offers from, like you said, you cover almost everything, and from a team to a sport to even like a network wanting you. Why'd you go to Nashville?
Well, it's a good story behind it. I mean, many years ago, first things first, I've always loved watching American television sports. I grew up in an era where we got the NFL. And I can remember as a small child watching the likes of Pat Summerall and John Madden. And then later, you know, you'd have a young Joe Buck and people like that. And, you know, Dick Enberg and all these characters. And the way it was presented to us back in the UK was really, it was kind of razzmatazz. It was finesse. It was classy. And I was just spellbound by it in an era when English soccer was actually on a bit of a dull, in the doldrums a bit, just pre-Premier League. So I always found that interesting. And then as my career progressed, I always kept an eye on MLS. I mean, I remember as a child watching the 1994 World Cup, and obviously part of that World Cup was to be the birth of a new professional league in the US. So that had our attention from the outset. And then as my career went on, you know, I saw one or two other people come over here, and I thought, you know, I would love that opportunity, love to come over. My wife and I love coming to America on holidays and things. We'd love to get an opportunity. But it came about in very, very sharp circumstances with regards to Nashville specifically. I was covering Southampton against Tottenham on New Year's Day 2020. John Champion of ESPN is in the room. He's sitting in a corner doing his final notes. And I just popped over and said hi to John. I'd known him, you know, fleetingly in press boxes down the years. You get to know, you know, names and faces, and you have a little chat here and there, and you know what everybody's up to. And I just said to John, hey, John, God, you're doing the job I dream of. You know, you've gone to America, you're doing MLS, you're with ESPN. You know, that's the kind of, I'd love to kind of do some of that. And John was kind of like, oh, I didn't, you know, didn't really realize that. But he said, funny you should say that, though, because I've been contacted by a couple of clubs in recent times who are maybe looking for a play-by-play voice. And he said, one of them is Nashville. And I knew at that time, well, Nashville are coming into the league. And he said, yeah, they're starting in 8 weeks. He says, it might be a bit too soon for you. So that set in chain, you know, a load of events, which ultimately led to, you know, me having a few conversations with Nashville, them looking at some of my work, me expressing, you know, yes, a desire to do this, even with a short time frame. And sure enough, you know, we were off and running and agreed to kind of make it, you know, a big move in life and in career, and you know, wouldn't regret it. I mean, it all happened around the COVID time as well. So, you know, there were these kind of heart in mouth moments where, you know, the airlines or the airports were shut and we got stranded in the UK for 3 extra months. And, you know, there were moments where you're thinking, oh my goodness, are we ever going to get there? And I will say a massive thing about Nashville in that, you know, they kept their faith and kept their nerve at that time in waiting for everything to calm down a little bit. And sure enough, the ports opened and, you know, I got here and, you know, we kept our nerve at our end as well. And I'm, you know, very, very pleased that we did.
Nice. So with this match coming up in all matches, just in how you cover soccer in general, what do you do to prepare each week? What's kind of your regimen?
Well, first and foremost, I try and watch as much of you know, the opposition as possible. I mean, I watch the highlights of every game every week to have a broad, you know, knowledge of what's going on in the league. And, you know, you consume a lot of material by reading and things as well. And if it's the Nashville end, it's invaluable to be able to go down to the training ground and spend time around that group. And, you know, I'm lucky enough to be able to do that, to be able to talk to players. So I make sure I know what's going on in their world. And you can have that background information that really makes a commentary better and adds some value to your commentary. With the opposition, it is about watching as much as possible and talking to people like yourself, you know, and finding out the inside word, the things I'm not necessarily going to know about if I'm not in market. You know, there's no substitute for talking to people. Obviously, you do a lot of statistical breakdown, a lot of work. You're, you know, foraging through all sorts of facts and figures. It's one of the great things about research. You know, you can stumble across a player. I always enjoy looking back on Anton Walkes, for example, only because Anton had a spell at Portsmouth in England, which was one of the teams I covered when I was a regional sports correspondent in the UK. And I can remember him from his time at Portsmouth. And then we've subsequently, Nashville have faced him at Atlanta. And so I always keep an eye on a player like Anton Walkes. Ah, oh, he's in Charlotte now. You know, is he playing? Is he, you know, what's he been up to recently? So, you know, there, a lot of work goes into each game. I'd say each game is a bit like an exam because you're really revising. Soccer is such a fast-paced game that, you know, you do have your notes and you do have everything at your fingertips during the match. But I find most of the stuff is coming out of my head during the game. Because I don't like taking my eye off the field. I like
you have
to
like
be,
a little chart
it's too fast.
Or something. Do you have a chart with stickers or like what do you use?
I have charts. I mean, you know, if I just hold that up. I mean, this is my, you know, still to be fully completed chart for the Nashville game. This is the players, you know, and that's just them laid out, you know, not in any particular order. But I will always at the bare minimum for every player I will have there. Season's goals and their career goals. I'll have their height, their age, where they're from, and their backstory. And then I'll have lines about every player. You know, I'll have something. You know, I mean, with Anton Walkes, actually, he's one of the ones I got filled in the moment. You know, faced Nashville 6 times, including scoring against Nashville last season in a 2-2 draw in Nashville. And also in, you know, in February 2020, you know, Christian Fuchs, I'll have some stuff down on, you know, that'll involve obviously his Premier League career, which I remember well. Right. You know, and you look at Harrison Offal, you know, I've got that he's going to be 36 in 2 weeks' time. And I've got that Christian Fuchs is 36 now. So I'm already in my head saying, you know, if the both of them are playing, you know, you've got a combined age of almost 72. You know, between the two fullbacks, you know, but no, I have something on everybody and obviously notes on our Nashville group as well, which I keep an update as I go along. You know, one of the ones I'm obviously every week I'm updating is Dax McCarty. You know, he's up to number 426 in appearances or wherever it'll be, you know, now that puts him up to, I think he's up to third now in minutes played in the league. And yeah, you know, I have it all there, but really I will then putting it down on paper, I'll then spend time reading it, because then I hope to deliver it from here rather than from
having
off the card.
Find it, yeah.
In the game, absolutely, yeah. The worst thing is, I mean, it's not. I'm not saying it doesn't happen sometimes, because it can do if an obscure thing happens. But you know, you don't really want to be kind of trying to look through notes mid game to try and check on something. Usually,
like
if you happen to do that, it's not important.
Breaks.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that's where soccer is such a different game, isn't it? You know, so right. many of the American sports, you know, I imagine it must be, it's a stat man's dream, isn't it? Because you can go to a commercial and something may have happened and you can just check it and you've got a couple right. of minutes to look at it. But I mean, again, last week, you know, Sean Davis scores for Nashville. You know, I've had on his card all season, you know, 4 goals in his career, last in August 2017, and then he scores last week. So, you know, we have the goal commentary, and at the end of the goal commentary, it's his first goal in almost 5 years, you know, so you need that stuff, you know, at your fingertips.
Right. And another comment about walks. I mean, Charlotte's on their best defensive run in the last 4 weeks, and it's no surprise, guess who's been starting those last 4 weeks?
That's right. And I mean, yeah, and actually interesting, because I know he was kind of in and out in the first few weeks, but it looks like Walks now has got himself kind of, you know, solidly, you know, back in the starting 11.
Yeah, it's an injury.
Right. So, you know, that's kind of, you know, held him out. And obviously, McCoon had been playing as well there and is an option next to Corojo. But no, it'll be interesting to see how he gets on. I mean, he knows this Nashville group well. He's played against Mukhtar and Sapong. So it'll be interesting to see how he takes them on.
And how they match it. So if you look back at your career, just thinking, like, do you have like a signature call or a style? Like if someone were to say, oh yeah, that's definitely Tony calling.
Well, I've always felt that, you know, sport's meant to be entertaining and it's meant to be fun. And you know, this is for many people going to a sports match, whatever the sport, at a weekend, it's a break away sometimes from, you know, from the everyday rigors of life and the challenges. So people want to be entertained. I want people to feel like I'm excited to be there. I enjoy being there. And I certainly do, even though for me, obviously, it is my job. Right. And I'm, you know, I was told once by a sports executive, you know, the thing I like about you is, you know, you're not afraid to be excited. Now, there's a line that us Brit commentators probably draw when it comes to excitement, what we feel is exciting. So you won't ever hear me kind of lose the plot and go crazy. But at the same time, you'll hear that, hopefully you'll hear the passion in my voice, and that, you know, I'm enjoying what I'm doing. I want to be there, and I want the audience to feel like, you know, look, we're sitting together watching this game. And I always say, you know, TV and radio commentaries are very different as well. You know, when you're there as a TV commentator, the audience can see what's happening. I want to be able to add words that improve the experience of watching it. I don't need to be telling you what you're seeing. Right. I want to just do, you know, so Sean Davis hits the ball into the net last week. You know, I said, here he is to shoot. And then the ball went in and out. I went top corner. You know, I don't need people to know. I didn't need to necessarily say, you know, he shoots, the keeper's missed it, it's gone in the net and it's a goal and right. went in the top corner. I'd rather be, you know, sparing my words and let the atmosphere and the crowd take over and just point out one or two things. Hey, by the way, do you see that? Not just that that was a goal, it went top corner, you know. So
he uses
I hope
that
kind
of
comes
through. You know.
Yeah, yeah. Definitely.
Well, as far as future work, I know this is kind of just a new venture anyway, but do you have other plans or big ideas of things you want to do in addition to this? I've read that you like doing documentaries, and like you said, you had interest in NFL. Is that in the future for you?
Who knows? I mean, right now, very much just concentrating on you know, this wonderful experience with MLS and with Nashville SC in particular. You know, what a tremendous journey, you know, everybody is on with this team. It's an incredible privilege to actually be coming from a country where our teams are 120 years old. I can't tell you what it means to be the kind of the first full-time voice of an MLS team, you know, like right. I am with Nashville, that I'm very conscious of history. I love my history. And I just feel very privileged that, you know, some of these calls, some of these moments are the moments that go in the vault and the history banks for this club. And I hope in 25 years, in 50 years, and long after I've gone, you know, right. that people will look back on that stuff and say, hey, you know, do you know what? Back then, they did a good job. And that right now is my kind of singular focus.
Awesome. What is something that you wish people would ask you in an interview that you never get asked?
Oh, that's a great question. That's a great question.
You might not know.
I don't think I do. I mean, I will say, you know, you've asked me, you asked me a couple of good questions earlier on, and one of which I hadn't answered that often. But I think it's about, maybe it's about just preparation and style. I mean, people will always ask you about preparation, but I think going into asking about style and what it means to you and why you get into it, you know, you can sometimes touch that at a base level. But I think what's been nice here actually is that, you know, I've been able to kind of really delve a bit deeper for you and actually really, you know, tell you about my grandfather or whatever and tell you, you know, what it means to me. So, but that's a good one. I'm interested to hear what are your other guests say when you ask them that?
Some of them said very similar, like, you know, I don't really think about it because I'm just answering people's questions. But others have said, you know, that they wish that people would ask more about, like you said, the process and like what goes into it, because all people see is that surface level. They, especially if you're a broadcaster or a journalist, they just see what you put out there. They don't know all the stuff that went behind it. And so I thought that's always important to me, is there's a story behind everybody's work. And we, you know, and that's why this podcast, I focused more on people who work following the teams and covering them, because there's actually more people who do that than actually play. So those are, to me, the stories about what makes a club and what makes the sport come alive. So that's why I think it's important to have people like you on here.
It's stoppage time.
You have a favorite personal ritual?
Ritual?
Something you do like every day. You're like, all right. And some people are like, I got to have this coffee, or I walk my dog every day at this time, you know, things like that. Like, is there something just like you enjoy just to do, and but you do it every day?
Well, there's a couple of rituals in my day. So living here in Nashville, we've moved from the land of tea drinking to coffee drinking. Mm-hmm. So our day for my wife and I will always start with coffee together, and we'll sit down and we'll look at the day and say, right, what's coming up? You know, what are we doing? So I would say that's as close to a ritual as I have, is that morning cup of coffee and set out what we're going to do. I am quite a creature of habit. I think commentators can be. I mean, I when the weather isn't 100 degrees like it is right now, I'm a big walker or sometimes runner. So I will like to go out and walk, and I don't mind walking around the same area. So I'll walk, you know, downtown Nashville, there's a lovely park, Bicentennial Park. Yes. And I will often go out and have a walk around Bicentennial Park, and I'll have my earphones in and be listening to, you know, an MLS podcast of some sort. And I'm, you know, you'll see me going round and round and round, you know, in Bicentennial Park, you know. I can get quite into that. And the only other thing is, you know, if you're talking about, you know, from the match day kind of point of view, like many, many commentators, I have a paranoia about being late or, you know, being in a rush or being, you know, not having everything ready. So I get to the ground very, very early because, you know, we have a massive production, really. You know, we do a pre-game show, we do the game, we do post-game show, we do pre-production things. And I like to get to the stadium nice and early. And I get there so early that, you know, I'm often, in terms of upstairs in the press box or the commentary box, I'll be the first person almost in there, apart from some guys rigging up the sound microphones or something. And I just appreciate that little bit of time where I'm just on my own, quietly contemplative, and I'm looking back through my notes and having a cup of coffee again and getting ready.
I'm still surprised about that coffee thing, how you switch so quickly.
I know. I must admit, well, coffee kind of has become almost the national drink in England these days. There's so much coffee drunk these days. So it wasn't too bad an adjustment. But I do have the PG tips in the cupboard here as well.
All right. Next one. Favorite unplugged activity? I'm imagining it's your walking, but there could be something else.
I think just going out and about and exploring Tennessee with my wife probably would be one of the biggest things. You know, there's some fantastic scenery When you're outside of Nashville, I mean, there's the throng and busyness of Nashville and, you know, and everything that's growing. But love getting in the car with her, getting out and about, and just exploring new places. And, you know, that's been a massive part of coming over here. And, you know, we were shut down a bit for probably almost the first year that we were here. So it's been a great, great voyage to, you know, we love traveling. We've traveled a lot around the world, and so we're just enjoying and embracing everything that we have in the US right now and getting around and seeing things.
Nice. Do you have a go-to snack?
Oh, now the Englishman here loves chocolate. You will find that at halftime in a soccer match, this will also fall under ritual, actually. I'm a sucker for a Mars bar or a dairy milk, an English dairy milk bar. And I actually generally have a Mars bar at halftime in a soccer match. And Jamie Watson, my co-commentator, he kept seeing me with these Mars bars at halftime. And you know, I think he felt a bit left out. So now I have to bring him a Mars bar as well. Oh, so I'm going through two Mars bars per game. So, you know, and thankfully you can buy them in the US. The dairy milk,
the same kind, because usually they're different.
Yeah, I would say the English ones are still slightly different. Yeah, our chocolate is definitely different in the UK. I will say that. So when we recently got back to the UK for a brief holiday, we came back over here we were loaded down with dairy milk bars, you know, and now we will ration those until I have a friend who's a pilot and he's flying over soon. So I already have the order in for some more dairy milk bars.
Oh, nice. All right. Next one. What design impresses you more, interior or exterior?
Well, that's an interesting one. I kind of would say, I think interior. I'd go interior because I think, you know, ultimately, you know, the interior can have so much more to offer. You know, the exterior is one facade, isn't it? So interior, I'd say.
Makes sense from a commentator. The details.
Yes.
Right? All right. Yes. Do you find starting a project or finishing one more gratifying?
I think finishing can be very gratifying, but it's a very short window that you have because you're always on to the next thing. So if you finish a tournament or a championships, something like, say, a track and field event where you've done, you know, months of research and following, you know, the events around the world, and then you go and do a 10-day world championships. And then when it finishes, when you're done and you feel like you've done a good job, that's a very gratifying moment when, you know, all those months of preparation and cramming into your head, you know, have come to an end. But it doesn't last long because, like I said, you know, you're kind of onto the next thing. And that next thing may have come along while you're still doing this other thing. So you may know, well, okay, no sooner I'm going to finish this championships on a Sunday, I know I'm doing a game next Saturday, and I'm already looking at what have those teams been doing in the couple of weeks while I've been kind of head down in the athletics or whatever. So, but yeah, gratifying for the finish, I think.
All right. What recharges you?
Recharging me would be the travel and time away and turning my cell phone off. So turn the cell phone off and maybe charge the battery, but not have me anywhere near it. Because I think, you know, there are so many advantages to this, you know, this world that we're in these days. We're connected 24/7. Social media is, you know, it's constant. There is so much sport to consume. I mean, it's a dream in some ways for somebody like me over here in the States. You know, I love watching sports. I love watching American sports and, you know, some of our traditional British sports. But you do need time to switch off from it sometimes. It's really, really important. So turn the phone off, travel, spend time with my wife, and get away from it all. Definitely is a good way to recharge the batteries.
Nice. All right. This is the last question. If you played on Nashville SC, if you were a player, what position would you play and what type of player would you resemble on the current squad?
Well, do you know what? I wouldn't resemble him, but I would want to play a similar position to someone like Mukhtar, but I would not be anything like him. But when I played soccer as a kid, I always played up front. And you know, would play in those teams. I was left footed, so I'd be on the left hand side of the field definitely. So I'd be happy to go left wing or just on the left side of attack. And yeah, I'd want to be playing the kind of you know, I'm not quite as tall as a CJ Sapongso. I guess I'll have to play in our team. I have to try and play the Mukhtar role. But that's a that's a pretty high bar I'm setting.
Right. There. Right. Awesome. Well, appreciate your time, Tony. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
No problem, Vic. Really lovely to talk to you, and very best of luck to Charlotte as you continue this inaugural season.
Thanks, and good luck with your broadcast tomorrow.
Thank you very much.
All right. Take care.
What a fantastic time with Tony, a true class act in sports broadcasting, who now has put his mark on MLS with Nashville SC. Today's match is on FS1 and Fox Deportes. However, you can listen to Tony and the fun he brings calling the match with the Nashville SC broadcast team on iHeartRadio Online and hear highlights at Nashville SC's website, nashvillesc.com. Follow Tony Husband on Twitter, at Tony Husband, and on Instagram, at Tony_Husband. We've added these links to the episode notes. Thanks so much for listening. The Charlotte FC podcast is hosted and produced by me, Nick Finelli. Audio editing and mixing by Eli Finelli. We really appreciate everyone who listens to our podcast. Please make sure you follow the podcast so you get it in your favorite platform's feed. We are on Twitter and Instagram at CLTFCPodcast, and you can visit our webpage to listen and learn more at charlottefcpodcast.com.